welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we'll speak with Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts about the wildfires in his state and biofuels. But first, here are this week's headlines. President Donald Trump used his remarks during the Great American Agriculture Celebration to urge Congress to pass a new farm bill and express his support for year-round E15 and additional farm aid payments. Speaking to hundreds of farmers gathered on the White House South Lawn, the president highlighted the $12 billion Farmer Bridge Assistance Program unveiled in December and said he would support additional farm relief in the next funding bill. It's unclear the exact size and what funding bill could move the additional aid, but lawmakers have told AgriPulse they're eyeing $15 billion. Trump also touted the EPA's temporary waiver to allow summertime sales of E15 and reaffirmed his commitment to year-round sales of the higher ethanol blend fuel, which could bring gasoline prices down for consumers as the war in the Middle East upends fuel prices. The president said he's trusting House Speaker Mike Johnson and Senate Majority Leader John Thune to find a deal that works for farmers, consumers, and refiners. Plus, the president told attendees that the farm bill is going to happen and told Congress to quickly pass it. The Agriculture Department will pause grant awards for the Rural Energy for America program. The pause comes so program regulations can be updated to meet an executive order calling for less federal wind and solar funding, according to a stakeholder announcement. REAP guaranteed loans are still being accepted, and certain solar, voltaic, and wind applications are eligible for guarantees. However, renewable energy systems and energy efficiency applications for fiscal 2026 are not currently being accepted. The USDA's new planting estimates report shows lower corn and wheat projected plantings and an estimated increase in soybean and cotton planted acres. After last year's bin-busting crop, the report shows corn acreage down 3% and soybean plantings up 4%, with total planted acres declining to near 2020 lows. Cotton planted area is estimated to increase 4%. Domestic wheat acreage is set to be down 3%, which, if the projection is actualized, would be the lowest since records began in 1919. It's important to note that the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, where a majority of global fertilizer passes, remains mostly closed as the conflict in the Middle East continues. The biggest wildfires to date recently moved across western Nebraska. We asked Senator Pete Ricketts about what he's seen on the ground and hearing from those impacted.
Yeah, it really is devastating. You know, it's burned over 900,000 acres of our state, which is really approaching 2% of our total land area. And a lot of that is pasture land, grassland, and that's going to make it very, very difficult for our ranchers. We've been fortunate that there's only been one loss of life for a fire of this magnitude, but it is still one of those things where it is really, really terrible for the folks who are there. Again, when you're talking about our ranchers, you know, to recover from this, to be able that land to support cattle is going to be another maybe 18 months. So our ranchers are going to need a lot of help between now and then. And so we've been really encouraging them to, you know, now that everybody's safe, document the damage, go to your FSA office. There's assistance programs there. And, you know, you apply for it. You deserve that help if you're a rancher that's been harmed by these fires. You know, many of our ranchers, they're tough people. They say, you know, don't help me, help the next guy over. He needs it more. But I would encourage everybody, you know, apply for that help. Because, you know, while there's hay coming in now from everywhere, from Illinois to Montana, this is something that's going to be an ongoing project to be able to feed those cattle. And we want to keep them here in Nebraska.
Yeah. And you mentioned that really humble nature of ranchers, especially, you know, those Midwest ranchers there. But, you know, talk about Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins recently toured the area. You know, what support is currently available? And has there been conversation about, you know, potentially new programs to better support the ranchers there and then also maybe the farmers that are helping support them through that, too?
Yeah, there are programs available. And that's why I was saying, please help out. And then, of course, you know, I always encourage people to contribute to the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, the Nebraska Cattlemen. Well, with Secretary Rollins, one of the things we really wanted to talk to her about was flexibility. And, you know, a lot of these programs, or whether you're talking about the requirements to be able to just go back and replace the fence lines, this is the sand hills. So after the fires, the wind kicked up and blew a lot of sand around. For example, we may not be able to find the post holes that were already there. And it may not be exactly the same one that was there before. So we really need that flexibility, given this is a disaster, to be able to do what's important and necessary to preserve the ranches and make sure that we've got that flexibility with regard to some of the rules and regulations so they're not constrained and slowed down by these things. Another example is, locally, in our state, we've got natural resource districts that limit how much water we can pull out for irrigation. We do a great job of taking care of our Ogallala Aquifer. But we also, again, this is important that with how dry it's been, that the farmers and ranchers are allowed to be able to get out there and put some water down so that all that sand doesn't blow away and that we can maybe get some, new sprouts coming up to be able to hold it in place.
Yeah. Secretary Rollins in an event earlier this week told a story of, a farmer maybe taking some ground out of production for row crops, even just to have a place for cattle in the area to graze. I mean, you mentioned that 18 months, for cattle to go back on that burned ground. So very cool to see those stories within the area.
Yeah, and that actually that's another great example of how we need flexibility because a lot of these programs that are out there are directly related for the people who've been impacted. And it makes sense, right? If my ranch has been harmed by the fire, that's who we want to help. But we need to be able to offer some assistance to some of those row crop farmers who are willing to take cattle on their land. But right now, the programs don't offer that flexibility to be able to help them out. And that's one of the stories that we heard. And we want to make sure that, again, that if there's the possibility that USDA can help out that farmer who's willing to take the cattle, even though his farm hasn't been burned, but be able to pasture them there, he's gonna have to give up growing the corn. So let's do something for him as well.
This disaster really comes at a time when the cattle herd is at the lowest level since the 1950s. And you'd mentioned, 12, maybe 18 months even for cattle to go back on that burned ground to graze. Do you have concerns about, the cattle herd rebuilding, after all this ground has been burned?
Yeah, certainly one of the things that, as the president said, he wants to bring beef prices down. To do that, we have to expand the size of the cattle herd. And while in other states that have a lot of federal land, the federal government's been opening up that land for grazing. In Nebraska, we're 97% privately owned, so we don't really have a lot of that opportunity. So I do worry that as we're trying to expand the herd, this is not going to help, right? That with all these acres that are going to take, 12 to 18 months to recover, we're going to have to find other places to be able to feed these cattle, and it's going to slow down the process of expanding the herd.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
Yes.
asked a farmer, "Are you sustainable?" they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, "I don't think I'm doing anything that special," but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The EPA recently issued a waiver for summertime sales of E15, but Congress is still responsible for a permanent fix to allow year-round sales of the higher ethanol blend fuel. We asked Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts for an update on year-round E15 negotiations from Capitol Hill.
Last week, the president did bring in farmers and ranchers, the largest gathering of farmers and ranchers at the White House in history, and he promoted E15 there. And so what we need to do is get this passed. It is, again, it's not a mandate. It's just basically allowing the opportunity to be able to use E15 all year round so that we have that certainty for our marketers and for our consumers. And I got to tell you, right now people are concerned about, gas prices going up with what's going on in the Middle East. When I went and filled up at Hy-Vee this week, I saved 55 cents a gallon using just the E10 blend for the same octane gasoline as the regular octane. So this can really help save consumers at the pump. It's going to help us clean up the environment, and it's great for our farmers and ranchers. So we really need to get E15 passed all year round, but it will take Congress acting to do that. The EPA cannot do it administratively.
And the EPA also recently released the renewable volume obligations, which are the highest ever biofuel quotas. How do those quotas influence planting decisions as we look ahead, planting coming soon, and also, long-term investments in states like Nebraska with a rural economy?
This is really important because one of the things we heard during the Biden administration, who was always like at least a year late in doing their RVOs, is this impacted the industry's decision on making investments. So the fact that we are taking that up, That sends a signal to the industry that they can invest. They can invest with confidence. It's really a great way to start off this second term of the Trump administration with Administrator Zeldin sending such a strong message. And of course, that will also help our farmers to be able to make the decision about how do I, plant versus, is it going to be corn? Is it going to be beans? I think that's actually something that will help give them some certainty as well that is really good for their decisions.
Senator, the farm economy is struggling right now, which puts a real spotlight on opening markets for U.S. grown commodities. Maritime biofuels is one avenue to expand markets, and you've introduced a bill to allow RIN credits to be used on fuel for ocean-going vessels. How large is the potential demand boost for agriculture from maritime biofuels?
Yeah, so obviously they're actually starting to head down this path already because the industry is looking to reduce their carbon output. So I don't have a number to give you right off the top of my head on how much this is going to boost demand, but obviously that's a big market there. So I've got the Renewable Fuels for Ocean-Going Vessels Act, which I've introduced as a bipartisan act with Amy Klobuchar. And again, this, as you pointed out, will allow for those RINs to be used for ocean-going vessels. That is a big market. And again, the exciting thing about that is when we had our hearing on this, when we talked to the folks in the industry, they are really looking for this. They are looking for solutions to be able to reduce the carbon output as they power these vessels. And this is one of the things that they are really excited about. So if we can get this passed, maybe in a future farm bill, that would be something that would really help also help kickstart the industry.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Huneke has more on the economic output of food and agriculture. And this week's Map It Out.
The agriculture and food sector is expected to generate about $10.4 trillion in value to the country's economy this year, according to the annual Feeding the Economy report. This map shows the economic output of food and agriculture by state. California leads the way, generating more than $1.2 trillion. Four other states are estimated to generate more than $400 billion, and a majority of states will generate anywhere from $100 to $300 billion each. The total of $10.4 trillion is up almost 10% from last year, and it represents a fifth of total national output, even though the value of U.S. ag exports declined. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Huneke.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. The EPA recently released the renewable volume obligations, which have been considered the most ag-friendly in history. At the same time, wildfires have burned much of western Nebraska. We're joined by Jenna Stanton with the U.S. Cattlemen's Association and Dave Walton with the American Soybean Association on our panel this week. To begin, Dave, what stood out to you in the RVO announcement?
Well, I really saw the culmination of a lot of years of work. There's a lot of stakeholders that played a role in asking the EPA to really look at that volume obligation as a stretch goal versus kind of the minimum. EPA heard us loud and clear. And so what we have here in front of us is really a great rule for agriculture. It incentivizes the use of domestically based feedstocks and producing fuel that is produced here domestically. So it really boosts the demand for our product in the marketplace, and that's the goal and what we were really striving to do. So this is a really good announcement for us.
Yeah, and Jen, I want to pull you into the conversation. We just spoke with Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts about the devastating wildfires that have moved across that state. But, what are you hearing from producers there and hearing from those on the ground?
Yeah, so first of all, our hearts go out to all of those who've suffered losses and just anyone who's really faced some hard times over the past few weeks with those fires in Nebraska. Any weather event like this is absolutely terrible and something that no producer wants to go through. And you know, this winter, like some of the most recent years, have been very sporadic and varied across the country in moisture levels and in situations like that, and really just resulting in another year of just unfavorable conditions for our producers. So what we know right now is we're looking at a little over 800,000 acres burned across western and central Nebraska, roughly the size of Rhode Island. Also, there's going to be a loss of equity with fence and other infrastructure. Really, the final toll of these fires is yet to be quantified. And as far as the gravity of the acreage and livestock losses, you know, they're still really trying to pull those numbers together. But the devastation to those who are impacted is very real. And we'll be working to push out resources and support for those who have been impacted. We also intend to be a resource for producers to make sure that they're aware of all the tools that are available to them. LFP, ELAP, LIP, some of those most recent changes made to those programs will be really helpful, hopefully, in this process.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. The Nebraska wildfires move through a cattle-heavy area of the state, home to many generational ranches. The U.S. cattle herd is at the lowest level since the 1950s. We asked Jenna Stanton with the U.S. Cattlemen's Association if the disaster adds to concerns about rebuilding the already low cattle herd.
Herd rebuilding takes about 2 to 3 years because that's the life cycle that we're working with. We saw that cattle inventory report come out earlier this year. We've been watching those cattle on feed reports. We're still sitting at about that 86 million herd mark nationally. So when we talk about rebuilding after these wildfires, and really we're asking this question on a national level from all the effects of fires in the last 5 years that we're now seeing manifest themselves in these low herd numbers. 70% of our nation's cattle inventory are in areas that are already suffering from abnormal dryness or drought, and that's been consistent over the past few years, leading to the situation that we're in today. And Nebraska case specifically, it's a very severe case of the extremities that producers face that are far outside of their control. And wildfire is just another weather event and a series of events that, you know, are impacting these numbers. We're looking at also drought and blizzards as well. And that's going to lead to a decrease, not only on the live cattle side of things, but, you know, also impacting the amount of land and forage that's available and all of those kinds of resources. And that constricts the ability of producers' ability to rebuild or increase their herd sizes or look at a greater retention. There are a lot of factors that have led to this generational low national cattle herd. So it's fair to say when we talk about rebuilding the herd and what that looks like, it's going to take a multi-pronged plan. It's not going to be one solution to really address this problem. We're going to have to think creatively and look at a lot of different avenues. It's important that we also look at market signals from a producer's perspective and guiding how we adjust and move forward, focusing on the things that we have more control over than just the weather. And that's market stability, both here at home and with our trading partners, you know, prioritizing that access to land and capital, doing our ranchers justice in our rhetoric around beef prices, defining a real safety net, and really talking to the next generation as we're at this transition planning apex in the cattle industry.
Well, the cattle sector has been one of the few bright spots in the farm economy right now, but broadly agriculture is being hit by high input prices, you know, skyrocketing fuel and fertilizer costs due to the war in Iran. So Dave, you know, on the fertilizer issue specifically, which USDA has been putting a lot of attention on, you know, what can the administration really do to ease those fertilizer costs for you and for crop growers right now?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, USDA and specifically Secretary Rollins has given this a lot of focus. I know her staff has been working with ASA on possible solutions to that. One of the immediate things that we can look at is countervailing duties. And right now there's a countervailing duty on imports of fertilizer from Morocco. When those countervailing duties are put in place, the market was in a little different place than it is now. And so we don't really need that countervailing duty in place. And in fact, it would help provide something for farmers just immediately. Tariffs in general have been affecting our sector more, as much or more than anyone else, because we've not only got issues with fertilizer, but fuel and machinery parts and just about everything that we use is got some component that's imported. And so tariffs in general really hit us hard.
And Jenna, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins has been largely focused on labeling transparency. She recently said she's a big supporter of mandatory country of origin labeling and used a National Ag Day event to launch a public awareness campaign for voluntary Product of USA labeling. You were at that event on National Ag Day. You know, how does the Product of USA labeling differ from current voluntary labeling requirements? And what does it really mean for U.S. cattle producers?
So as of earlier this week, specifically, and bleeding into all the events from last week during National Ag Week, we're seeing a renewed assurance that truth in labeling, and more specifically, mandatory country of origin labeling, or MCOL, is a bipartisan issue. We really appreciate the Secretary's very public commitment earlier this week to MCOL, framing it in the same way that U.S. cattlemen always have, that it's a black and white issue, it's a matter of transparency, full stop. We are aware of the trade hurdles that do come with MCOL, and we are working with the administration to eliminate those. You know, that is something that is feasible. And we celebrate that really first key step in that process when that new product, the USA definition, went into effect January 1 of this year. That definition really is the key moment to protecting the integrity of true American beef. As you said, we were pleased to be a part of the new label unveiling last week and the announcement with the awareness campaign that came with it. We're very optimistic of the impact that this Product of the USA awareness campaign will have on both producers and consumers. I think from the consumer side of things, we're educating the consumer about where their food comes from and that it's a right that they have, and it's essential to the viability of keeping beef demand strong. I think the alignment here with the Make America Healthy Again movement is so crucial, because we know that informed consumers, when informed and educated, will make healthy choices. When we take a look at the larger economic cycle here, the demand for beef in the U.S. is summiting and has been climbing for the past couple of years. And as consumers learn what real American beef looks like, and this label recognition becomes a household recognition, everyone understands what it means and the quality and the integrity behind it, that demand and that consumption is only going to skyrocket from here. On the producer side of things, this label and the rollout that comes with it, it's different from what we've seen in the past, purely because the rhetoric and the education is stronger here. For producers, this is a reward for a long fought, long overdue battle to get true public recognition for the superior product that they raise globally.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Honecke has more on the farm share of the food dollar in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Farmers are continuing to see smaller shares of every dollar spent on food produced in the United States. This chart shows the farm and marketing shares of dollars spent on domestically produced food. Farmers received 11.8 cents in 2024, down from 12.1 cents in 2023. This represents the payments farmers get for everything grown directly on farms. The rest of the 88.2 cents goes towards the marketing bill, and that includes all costs associated with food processing and distribution. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south, and it blew that way, and it went straight down the house. lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate will be out of session next week for the Easter recess, and the White House Easter egg roll is on Monday. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.